This is Hacker Public Radio, episode 3832, for Tuesday, the 11th of April, 2023. Today's show is entitled, How I Left Google Behind. It is hosted by Minix, and is about 30 minutes long. It carries a clean flag. The summary is, just an overview of what services I now use to replace previously used Google services.
Hello, this is Minix. I thought I'd do a little overview of what I did to get rid of Google, how I replaced all the different Google services I used in the past, and not really so much why, as just everybody has their own reasons. I guess the main reason is I just wanted to have control over my data and services I used, and didn't really want to depend on another company to do that for me, mainly because if they ever go under, which Google is a pretty big company, but still, if they ever go under, then I just lose all my stuff. And if I was going to lose everything, I wanted it to be me that screwed up and not depending on another company. So this is just kind of off the top of my head, so I may miss a few things, but I wanted to go ahead and get a show out for the queue. So I've been through lots of iterations of different hardware to host these different services, and it's that would deserve its own show, everything I've tried, from mini PCs to Raspberry Pis to all that stuff. But currently, I have settled on just a decent desktop computer, which I use as a server. It's got a 11th gen i5 in it, 64 gigabytes of RAM, and then 12 terabytes of SSDs. And on top of that, I run Proxmox, which is a Debian-based hypervisor. And within that, I run my my services as either Linux containers or virtual machines, depending on what the actual application is. So I'll just kind of go down the line of what I host and what it replaces for me as far as Google goes. One of the first things I was interested in was Nextcloud. Before it was Nextcloud, it was OwnCloud, and I had hosted that not really successfully on the original Raspberry Pi, and that was so underpowered that just waiting for the web interface to load took forever. But that was my first kind of self-hosting experience. Since then, I've gone through, like I've said, lots of different machines, but currently I run Nextcloud on the Proxmox server, and that helps me replace things like Google Drive, Google Photos. I was using it for Google I was using Google Photos quite a bit, to the point that I got a message from Google eventually that said, if you want to use this much data, you're going to have to start paying for it, which was another reason that I kind of wanted to get off Google services. Like I said, if I'm going to pay for something, I'd rather it be something that I physically own here rather than cloud storage on somebody else's computer. So Nextcloud handles my photo library now. It handles my notes. So I was using Google Keep, I believe it's called, you know, for a long time, which was nice because I could access it across different browsers and machines as long as I had a Gmail account. And now I use Nextcloud Notes instead. There's a few features it doesn't have that Google Keep does, but it's nothing that prevents me from using it as I like to use it, which is just a simple note-taking app. I don't really use it to compose letters or anything like that. That's more in kind of the open office territory, which is another thing that I use Nextcloud for, is for office applications Google Sheets and stuff like that. I use the Nextcloud Office for that. So photos, notes, just general data that would go to the Google Drive, I now keep on my Nextcloud. The next thing was getting my email up and running, and that's the very first Google service I started with was email. And everything I researched online made it seem like you had to be like a hardcore admin, graybeard to ever run an email server. But honestly, if you have the right ISP that will allow certain ports to be open, like 25, so that you can send and receive email, it's not that difficult. At least the way I run it is not. I use an application called iRedMail. I use the community edition, so you have to maintain it yourself, but it's free and open source. And that's installed within a VM on Proxmox on Debian. And it's not really, it's a little daunting at first getting it set up. But once it's set up and you have your spam filters working and you have your DMARC records, everything within your DNS set up correctly, as long as your ISP allows you, like I said, to have port 25 open, which mail servers need, which a lot of ISPs don't. So if you're going to host an email server, check first with your ISP that you can actually do so. Host an email server. With my ISP, it's not really a problem. I actually just called them and told them what I was going to do, and they opened the port right up for me. So, but you might want to check beforehand just to make sure you can before you actually get into installing it. So I use iRedMail. There's like a million different options out there, and it comes with a nice little administrative interface, web-based interface, and I have that on... I believe 256 gigabytes of space, and I have my personal email and my kind of contracting email that I do different work on with customers as well. And then I have an email address on there that I use just for like promotional stuff, enter contests or to sign up for different things. So, and that works pretty well, and I don't really have an issue with spam either with iRedMail. And I think I use about 4 gigs of RAM with that virtual machine for my email. But like I said, email, if you take the time to read the docs and take your time with setup and go through all the instructions carefully and have just at least a basic knowledge of the way computers and networking works, and Linux in my case, I think you will find it's not nearly as daunting as they say it is. So I use my mail server for everything mail related now. I don't depend on Gmail or any other email service. So that replaced Gmail for me. As far as a music app, I was big into Google Play Music. And it was cool at the time because you could upload all of your music to Google Play Music and then you could access it for free with the app. And if you wanted to use their music library, like for things you didn't own, you could pay a fee just like any other music streaming service. And I did that for a while. I had Google Play Music and I had a big library on there, and it worked okay until they switched to YouTube Music, and then I hated it. I hated the interface. I hated a lot of my music that I had uploaded was no longer on there, I guess because of licensing rights. And the quality of the audio was bad. It was like they were using YouTube video, YouTube videos of the songs that I had uploaded, you know, in high quality, and playing them back, and you know, as like a low quality YouTube video quality. And even if I had changed the settings to high quality, it still sounded bad. And a friend of mine had a Spotify account, family account, so he put me on there, and that was better than YouTube Music. I still have that account. I don't use it for much, but the quality at least was better, and the number of artists was more varied. And but still, there was things that I would look for on there that I owned, that I knew existed because I listened to them, but they just weren't on Spotify. And so I said, well, I've got this giant music library. Why don't I just host it myself as well? So what I came into was a Funkwell, which, if you remember, there was a service called Grooveshark a long time ago that you could upload your own music library to, and then you could play other songs from other people's libraries, and it was all free. It was ad-supported, but basically, you know, you didn't pay anything. And that eventually got killed by, I think, copyright holders and things like that. So Funkwell, you could say, is kind of like the Grooveshark spiritual successor. That's kind of where they got the name. And it's, you know, you self-host it, or they have recommended hosters too. But it not only does it host your music library, but the web interface is really nice. And the mobile app is real nice. I use it for Android, and also it's federated too. It's part of the Fediverse, so if anybody else, you know, you can follow somebody's music library from any federated app, or you can federate your Funkwell library with theirs, which I do with one of my co-hosts on the Linux Lugcast. We have federated our servers together so we can share music. And It's a really good, not just music listening, but music sharing application. And it's good at, tagging your music and all that stuff. It's what I use for in place of Play Music / YouTube Music / Spotify now. And I like it. I've been able to, you know, browse other people's libraries and find a lot of cool stuff too, that kind of how Spotify recommends you music. I can browse other people's federated libraries and do the same thing with Funkwell. And plus, it's my music, you know. It's not going to go away anytime soon, unless I just screw up my server or something. But speaking of YouTube Music, there's also YouTube, as in the original video service, which I still use, but I use it in a way that I'm not logging into Google. And so I guess it's not completely leaving Google behind, but for me, it's a lot better experience, which I use a service called Invidious, which I host myself. And it's just it's an alternate user interface for YouTube. And it's very low in resources. I think I only give it like a gig of RAM or something. But you can create account on your NVIDIA server. You can give the address to other people so they can use your NVIDIA server. But what it does is it gives you a way to browse YouTube without logging in to a Gmail account. And also it blocks ads. And it gives you other options like... like you can download videos straight from the Invidious web interface and things like that. Now, it doesn't have like its own mobile app, which is okay. I mean, I use it in the browser. It's fine. But what I do like about it is it doesn't include all the crud that I hate about YouTube as far as recommending me things that I have zero interest in and that have nothing to do with the kind of videos I actually watch. You can import your YouTube subscriptions into NVIDIA's as well, so you'll have all your subs there. And YouTube has really gotten bad, like as in just crummy lately. I used it the other day just to kind of look through around, and I was like, man, I'm really glad that this isn't the main interface I use to access YouTube now. I use NVIDIA's, the amount of things that they try to push on you, that's just terrible. I mean, it's like terrible videos, all this clickbait stuff, and, you know, anyway, that's a whole nother story. But NVIDIA's is what I use to view YouTube. Now, to host my own videos, instead of using YouTube like I did in the past, I use PeerTube. And PeerTube is another self-hostable web application that you can upload your videos to. It's federated as well, so you can browse other federated PeerTube instances. And the name kind of gives you a clue as into how it works, where it doesn't just stream from your server, it also uses other peers that are part of the network to help you stream the data, so it doesn't bog down your server if you have a lot of people watching your videos. And you can comment on videos, you can add hashtags, you can do whatever you want to, just like you can on YouTube. Now, of course, the audience is way, way smaller, and if you really want to engage with people, you're going to have a lot harder time than you would with YouTube, which already has a huge built-in audience. But PeerTube's getting bigger and better every day, but it's, you know, it's self-hosted and it's federated. So you're going to have to understand that as you're searching for things, you may come across, you know, videos or opinions, things like that, that you don't agree with and then would never be allowed on YouTube or any other centralized service. But that's kind of the trade-off of a self-hosted, you know, a federated option like that, is anybody can pretty much post whatever they want, and there's ways to block those things and block other users that you find like trolls and stuff like that. And there's ways to do that, but for me anyway, it is satisfying to see people engage with my videos on PeerTube. It's not monetized or anything like that, but also I don't have ads or anything, you know, that a centralized service would try to push into your videos or make you watch if you're watching other videos. So as far as YouTube goes, I use NVIDIA's to watch YouTube videos, and I use PeerTube to post my own videos. So let's see what else. Hangouts, Google Hangouts. I was a big user of that. And of course, we all know what happened to Google Hangouts. And now I have no idea what it is. Google Chat. I think they had several other services. It's in the graveyard pretty much, though. So Hangouts was pretty big with me and my friends, because even if you had an Android phone and somebody else had an Apple phone, it would, you know, it was cross-platform, and we could all chat with each other in different Hangout rooms and stuff like that. And from there, I went to Signal or Telegram. I'm not sure which one I went to first. But it may have been Telegram. And that was okay. You know, people weren't as familiar with Telegram. Once again, even though it's a more privacy-oriented, you don't own the main server, and you don't really have access to it. And so it just always kind of bugged me in the back of my mind. And Signal's the same way. I mean, Signal's open source, of course, but unless everybody subscribes to your Signal server, you're not going to be able to communicate with other Signal users. So it's open source, but it's still centralized. And there's text messages too and things like that. But ultimately, I kind of settled on the Matrix protocol, using the Synapse server and then Element as a client. So Matrix has been a big kind of boon for me as far as finding other like-minded people through different matrix rooms and then chatting with my friends. And we have a matrix room for the Lugcast, and, you know, where people can gather. And so it's replaced, you know, things like Google Hangouts and Telegram and stuff like that. And I host my own matrix server, so I have control over it. You know, I don't have to worry about it. That somebody pulling the service someday. And I've used Discord in the past as well, which is pretty cool. But to be upfront, in this episode, I got banned from Discord. And it wasn't anything I did. It was, I think I was using a Yahoo email account and it had gotten hacked or something. So apparently it's whoever hacked my Yahoo account had disseminated all this spam and stuff. And so they, of course, they didn't listen to anything I had to say, which I didn't really care. I wasn't that invested in Discord. But that got me out of Discord, which is kind of what turned me on to Matrix in the first place, is because, well, who's going to ban me from my own server? Nobody, you know. And also, from what I hear from other people and from friends, is Discord is kind of, they're really pushing their paid service, maybe Nitro or something like that. And there was some kind of uproar about terms and conditions that, anyway, I don't really keep up with that stuff. But to me, it seems like as far as a chatting service goes, you want to keep those chats that you have with friends, and maybe you want to go back and look at things that you've said in the past and look up web links and stuff like that. And if that all depends on Discord always being there or always providing you access and not paywalling you at some point in time, then I think you are maybe be heading for a bad time in the future if something ever happens to all your messages and stuff like that. So that kind of soured me on the whole Discord thing, and I moved permanently to Matrix, and I've enjoyed Matrix, and I recommend everybody at least give it a try. You can sign up, you know, a free account on matrix.org and just see if you like it and see if you can talk your friends into joining as well. So as far as chatting programs, you know, chatting applications, Matrix in a roundabout way has replaced Google Hangouts for me. Let's see, what else? I'm trying to think. Okay, I know one thing that I still rely on Google for, it's just in full disclosure, is I use Google Domains for all my web domains, but I don't have to. You know, that's one thing there's so many domain providers out there that I could sign up with anybody. It's just me being lazy. And honestly, they don't collect a lot of information for me when it comes to, just having a domain service with them. So it's not like a Gmail account where everything is recorded and stuff like that. So I may, you know, switch just to fully get off Google in the future. But I'm really not in a big hurry. So it's not a big deal. It's cheap, $12 a year. So, and they're reliable. So I'm trying to think what I know. There's something I'm okay. Social, kind of like social media. I don't know if anybody that's listening ever used it in the past, but Google Plus I thought was great. That was one of the things that Google did that I was really disappointed that they got rid of, because to me it did social media right, where as far as, you know, the people that you interact with, you could have these circles, and it was very tech oriented as far as the audience that I was drawn to on Google Plus, and it wasn't just full of ads. You know, of course they were harvesting your data, which is how they were keeping it afloat, and I don't think it really took off like in the mainstream. So, you know, just like a lot of Google products, it kind of went away. But I thought at the time, I thought they did a good job with Google Plus, and that was my main kind of social media outlet was Google Plus. And after that went away, I went to MeWe, which I still have an account there, I just don't visit it anymore. And MeWe was actually or is actually, I think it's still around, it's still pretty good. As far as I know, you know, a lot of people don't use it like they used to, and but it, you know, they tell you it's privacy oriented, and it's very minimal as far as ads go and things like that. And they had lots of groups and stuff, cool groups, which is what I liked about Google Plus too. Facebook has always been like a non-starter with me. There's just way too many things wrong with Facebook. I could do a whole show on that, all things that are wrong with Facebook. Twitter, I just don't really care about. So Google Plus, and then MeWe was cool. And but now that I've gone kind of the self-hosted route, I just stick to Mastodon. I host my own Mastodon server, which is also really easy to do. You can I'll host it natively in a virtual machine. I think I have about 128 gigabytes of a hard drive space on there, and then maybe only like 2 gigabytes of RAM. I can't remember. I'll have to go back and look. But anyway, it doesn't take It's not very resource intensive either, and depending on what you post, you really don't need a lot of space. But as far as just like following people that, that I'm interested in, and putting my own projects out there, and just quick little, you know, notes and photos and stuff like that, I basically just stick to Mastodon, my own Mastodon instance, and it's federated as well. So that, as far as like tech-oriented things that I'm really interested in, Mastodon does a good job of that, of replacing Google Plus for me, for what I need it for, or what I want it for. I don't really need it, but for what I want it for. If I want to write longer form things, I have a blog that I can do that with, and I use Write Freely, which is like a blogging service that you can host yourself, or you can sign up for a Write Freely account on their own, but it's federated as well. So, I mean, I can follow anybody's Write Freely blog from any other federated service like Mastodon, or, you know, people follow my Write Freely blog from their own Mastodon accounts and stuff. And so for like longer form articles that aren't just quick messages on Mastodon, I'll post on my blog, that's Write Freely. And I recommend Write Freely. It's really easy. It's just a real simple web service. I have that in a Linux container. I think I have like 1 gig of RAM for that, and maybe 64 gigabytes of hard drive space, I believe, of storage on that container, which is more than enough for what I use it for, mainly just writing and sometimes small videos. If I post a video on there, it would be linked back to my PeerTube, which I have plenty of storage on. So I'm trying to think of what else I might use the Google services. I use Android, which, you know, is a Google company, but I would really like to go to a Linux phone one day. Right now, the whole Linux mobile landscape is a little rough, but I still have hope, you know, because the PinePhone and what Librem has done and other companies that they will keep advancing in a way that I can actually use it as a daily driver without sacrificing too much, as long as I have certain applications. You know, GPS is one I use a lot on my phone and things like that. So I'm hoping in the future I can get rid of Android too, which would, I guess, would kind of be the final nail in the coffin for Google, for me. I still use Google Search, but other search engines are catching up, especially with ChatGPT integration and things like that. So sometimes you use Bing. There's several self-hosted search engines that you can use as well. I can't remember the names of them all. But yeah, I've tried them in the past, and I had a hard time like searching for things, finding what I wanted. DuckDuckGo is decent. I use DuckDuckGo quite a bit, along with Google Search and Bing and things like that. But I wouldn't really call that, you know, because I don't log into that. I mean, I'm sure they keep a history of what I search for, but I'm not logged in when I'm doing searching on Google searches. And so I wouldn't say that that's anything you know, that I would miss if Google Search went away. There's plenty of other search engines. So I can't really think of any other Google services I use. I guess Android is a big one. And I use Google Maps on my phone too, which OpenStreetMaps I've been looking at a lot, and I'm wanting to contribute to that as well. So all in all, I don't think my title might be a little misleading, how I left Google behind, because I didn't completely leave it, but I was able to replace a lot of the services that I had used Google for in the past, and maybe this will give you kind of an overview of some things that you can do if you want to decentralize your digital life and get off of Google and Microsoft and some of the big players out there. So if you get any questions, feel free to leave any comments on the HPR episode page, and I'll be happy to answer them. For now, have a good night, and I will talk to you later.
Been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. Today's show was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hosting for HPR has been kindly provided by anhonesthost.com, the Internet Archive, and rsync.net. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International License.